KSTX.
This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. You might not have noticed, but San Antonio had an election on Saturday, and I say that because so few people decided to show up and vote. But there were results, and some key races are going to be going into runoffs. We want to hear about your election experience. Did you vote? Did you decide not to vote? Why not? If you have an analysis or predictions, give us a call. The number is 614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org. Go to the comments section of our website, tpr.org, and send us a tweet on Twitter. Our guest this half hour, Gilbert Garcia. He is the columnist for the San Antonio Express News, been following closely many of these races. And Ryan Lloyd from our Texas Public Radio, our ACE political city reporter, political reporter here, and welcome to The Source, guys.
Thanks, Dave, for having us.
All right, so what is the biggest takeaway of the election? I mean, is it the results? I mean, or the fact that the turnout was so low?
I guess the top story would be just how awful the turnout was, and it was similar to what we saw 2 years ago, but it's the continuation basically of a trend toward increased voter apathy here, and I think that it's reaching a kind of a crisis point in San Antonio, and I think we're at a point where we need to consider some options. You know, Austin in 2012 had voters approve charter amendment propositions that would move elections to November of even numbered years, which if we did that, I'm sure our city elections would get overshadowed.
So it would be like the general election for the state elections,
state and national elections, right? And I think that one of the concerns would be that they would, there would be some logistical issues. We'd have really long ballots. The process of voting for each voter would take longer.
And that kind of seems like we're going in the wrong direction. Rather than moving elections from the weekend, from a Saturday to a Tuesday, we should be moving elections from a Tuesday to a Saturday.
Well, that's probably true. But I think that we're just at a point where the interest has been so low in city elections that if we're going to get people out in November for state and national elections, which we're still getting pretty, relatively decent results there, might as well have city elections at the same time, so at least people are going to go out, and whether they're informing themselves about city elections or not, at least they'll be there.
Yeah, nothing drew people to the polls with this one because Mayor Castro didn't have a really outspoken challenger.
There was no marquee race.
Exactly. That's there was right. Nothing to bring people out.
That's right.
Yeah.
He ran, and he was on the ballot, and he had these candidates. I guess Rhett Smith didn't get the source bump.
He got 13%.
Maybe he did because, when you look, he's been running for mayor and congressman and various things for a while. But in 2007, when he ran against Phil Hartberger, when Phil Hartberger was running for re-election, Rhett Smith got 900 votes. This time around, he got almost 6,000. And I think it was the source, really, that made it.
Yeah, because he called in and told us about his platform. And you can call in, too. Listeners, we want to hear what you think. What about your experiences? Are you satisfied? Are you disappointed? The number to call, 614-8980. And so let's go to look at some of these results. First of all, Mayor Castro did win re-election, and he won it handedly. I mean, there'd be lots of people who'd be happy with, what was it, 64?
66. Yeah.
66%. But it's not near as strong as it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he was over 80% 2 years ago. Phil Hartberger, and when he ran for re-election, was around 77%. And when you consider how low the turnout was, I mean, the actual number of votes he got, I think it was under 30,000. You know, it's not real inspiring. And I think that there are different ways of looking at it. One is that he has a lot of support downtown. Diego Bernal in District 1, which is, downtown is part of District 1. He didn't have a challenger, so that probably suppressed some of the votes for the mayor there. But nonetheless, I think you have to look at it as not only that fewer people turned out for the mayor, but more people turned out for others. And Rhett Smith was an example of that. And so I think that there was kind of we've seen the mayor become more partisan in the last year. And while I think he's still very popular in San Antonio, there has been somewhat of a backlash, particularly on the north side. And I think people were, we didn't have 6,000 people voting for Rhett Smith or 2,000 plus people voting for Michael Commander Adrogo as much as they were voting for, it was an anti-Castro vote.
Sure. Right. All right, we're going to go to the phones quickly. We do have a caller. Carl is on the line. Carl, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for taking my call. Just real quickly, I wanted to say about the mayoral race, the reason I actually thought about going and voting, but I thought, what difference would it make? Castro had a lock on it. I didn't see that there was really anybody that had any chance of changing that. And in my district, District 8, I went to several of the campaign events and could not tell a difference between the candidates. They were all pretty much the same. So it didn't make a whole lot of difference who was going to be in there. We were going to be getting the same old, same old.
All right, Carl, I appreciate your phone call. And you know what? I'm with Carl. Mm-hmm. I didn't vote. Mm-hmm. Okay, shame on me, but I didn't. You know, I had a new weed whacker, and I was going to use it, and that's how I spent my Saturday. You know, it was gorgeous outside, and I had the same issues as Carl. Yeah. I didn't see, you know, that there was a critical issue on the ballot that I felt that I was compelled to vote one way or the other.
But if you and Carl had gone to vote, then maybe we wouldn't be having a runoff. Maybe if we got more people out to the polls.
But in my district, there was nothing on the ballot that was, you know.
Concerning the mayor, the thing that stands out to me is 2 years ago we knew he was going to win too when he was running for re-election, and he still got 80%. So there has been some kind of change. But I think, you know, it's not only that people knew that the mayor was going to win, but it's also that people, even if it's just intuitively, know that he's pretty much got a lock on the majority of the council. So he's going to have some opposition maybe on, from the north side council members on certain issues, but he's going to have 7 or 8 votes with him, regardless of who gets elected. And I think maybe people sort of sense that, you know, this isn't – he's kind of in control of things when it comes to the council. And no matter who I vote for, it's going to be the same.
Right. So in these districts like 5, 8, and 3, where there were, you know, some decisions to be made, did we see increased turnout, I mean, in those areas? Or was it anemic like across the city?
Yeah, I think it was pretty status quo across the city. I mean, you had different issues going on with District 8 and District 5, District 3 as well. But I guess you have the more fired up candidates, like in District 8 with Ron Nuremberg and Rolando Briones. They're going after each other. Nuremberg captured 49, and I think Briones was 45. So, you know, they've been going at it, you know, this whole election cycle. So Medina drew a lot of, you know, people to, you know, challenge him, because they're upset with how he's leading the district. And I guess in District 3, you had an appointee mm-hmm. Filling the seat for Jennifer Ramos, and then you have the person coming in who actually had boots on the ground. People have said she was in the community, mm-hmm. and she upset.
So you're talking about Leticia Azuna. She lost. She had been appointed. She was running for the first time, but then she fell short against Rebecca Villagram. What do we know about Rebecca Villagram?
I talked to Dr. Henry Flores from St. Mary's University today, and he told me that Rebecca, he actually had her in class when she was a political major at St. Mary's, and he said that he had no doubt that she would win the race because she was connected to the community. That's what he said was wrong with Ozuna, that she basically didn't connect to the neighborhoods and didn't get out there to you know, get people to go vote. And I actually talked to him today, and we have
Okay, we're going to hear from that when we come back from break. This is The Source on KSTX. We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 614-8980. And welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking with Gilbert Garcia from the San Francisco Express News, Ryan Lloyd. He's a reporter for Texas Public Radio, about the results of the election that we had on Saturday. We invite you to call, explain why you voted, when or if you voted, your analysis. You have predictions of these races that we still get some runoffs. The number is 614-8980. So, Ryan, you were saying earlier about the newest person to the city council. This is the only big change that we know of so far is Rebecca Villagram. And and you said that she was a student at St. Mary's University.
Yeah, she was a student of Dr. Henry Flores, who I talked to, a political dean over there at St. Mary's. And he said that he was not surprised at all why Rebecca won, and this is why.
She put the elbow grease in and had her people working on the street. And one of the things about that particular geographical area, the south side of San Antonio, is you've got to be with the community and in the community if you're going to be elected to office. And Ms. Villagran is from there, and she definitely laid some leather in that community, walking the streets and knocking on doors, and that's what you've got to do. And I'm not sure Ms. Ozuna did as good a job at that.
He also said that Ozuna, when she was at town hall meetings, seemed very distant from the people who were there, didn't really respond well. I guess people just didn't get a good vibe from her.
Well, I really liked the fact that she had an agenda of trying to increase San Antonio's broadband, right. And I really hope that we don't lose her from the political scene, maybe not as a city council, but maybe as an advocate for that issue, which is critical for our success as a city.
And that'll probably be her big legacy. And, you know, when the council decided to fill that vacancy last year, these two candidates were both up for it, and I think Rebecca Villagran was seen as the front runner early on. And Leticia Ozuna got the appointment because she so impressed the council with her intelligence, her knowledge of when it came to these kinds of issues. And I think that they thought that she was somebody who could bring something new to the table, which she did. But I think we did see that she's not a natural politician.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, she was at the council meeting when they were interviewing them in front of the public. I mean, Ozuna, I think it did impress them, like you said. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was everyone's choice. She made everyone's list, and so that's why she got the appointment.
Everyone on the council.
Everyone on the council.
But maybe not from the people. Maybe
not the people, yeah.
Okay, all right. So we do have runoffs. The runoff will be on June 15th, and two runoffs that we're looking at is District 5. The incumbent, David Medina, running against Shirley Gonzalez, and she has a pawn shop in the area and very well known and respected.
That's right. She's only lived in the district for about 3 years, but her family's pawn shop has been there for decades, and she's basically taken it over in recent years. And this is her first time running for office. You know, David Medina, he's running for a third term. There have been a lot of concerns, questions about him. One of our reporters, Josh Baugh, reported in December that between the beginning of this last term and December of 2012, he had missed 20% of council meetings. There have been a lot of criticisms that he hasn't been very engaged with the community. And
this,
so,
this weird pay thing for his assistant, you know, it was at the highest level that you could pay someone on city council and their offices, and it was pretty high.
Yeah, it was. And you know, they're just, he kind of came in as part of the, what people would call the Tejeda political machine. They brought him in. He even named one of the Tejedas as his chief of staff for a while. So that kind of had that South Side political machine, and there were always some concerns about what kind of council member he was. You know, he's done some things that were really questionable. Just recently, over the last 3 months, he's had a lot of city-funded events that have been extremely, spending like $10,000 a pop for these events that were basically campaign events.
These are like using his city council office, mm-hmm. and you're going to have like the spring fling for the senior
jazz
citizens.
In the park, exactly. Yeah, and
there's
and
nothing wrong with that.
But during the election cycle, and when you're spending quite a bit of city money and sort of putting your name above the event, it just smacks of just using your office and using the city to help get you reelected. And I think he's not the only council member to do this, but I think if we look at this election cycle, he took it to another level.
I reported that he took some senior citizens to go vote and then actually went inside with them with wearing a logo shirt that says his name on it.
Yeah. Which is not allowed.
Which is not allowed. And so Shirley Gonzalez, who was outside, called the Bexar County Elections Office and reported him, and the judge said, please leave.
And I think we're going to see some issues going to the runoff with some of this kind of stuff. I mean, there are stories out there about some potential abuses from Medina campaign workers at polling sites.
So that already there's an intensity there.
You know what I think is interesting is Mike Kieber on Facebook. He wrote, and he's listening, by the way. He said he was going to be listening today. He said he was now having trouble choosing between Nuremberg and Briones.
In District 8?
Yeah. He's knocked out, so he was the third candidate. He got knocked out of the race, and he says, now I don't know who I'm going to vote for. So I think a lot of people out there are probably in his situation. You know, now we're going to a runoff, and maybe they're reevaluating their position. Who are they going to vote for? Yeah. If they go vote at all.
If they go. And you know, the thing is, Rolando Briones spent a lot more money. He spent about four times as much money as Ron Nirenberg. And I think that in the Briones camp, although he'd gotten some tough coverage, particularly over his history at Saws and why he was let go at Saws in 2002. Nonetheless, his people were very confident. I think just because of the amount of money they put into the campaign, and they had TV ads, and still
came out 4% less.
Came out 4% less. So I didn't look at that race as a big surprise, but I was somewhat surprised at how well Ron Nirenberg did in that campaign.
Right. So I do have some emails here. One says, hello, I did vote in the recent elections. I had no idea that the elections were scheduled. I happened to be on the UTSA campus when they were told, when they hold early voting. I saw a sign for early voting, decided to vote, although I had no idea what was on the ballot until I was taken into the voting booth. And so tomorrow we're talking about low information voters, and that might segue into that, you know. And the other... another email, this is from Randy Bear. Considering a 33% protest vote with no marquee challenger to Castro, what are the prospects for a 2015 for a challenger to Castro like Elsa Chen?
Well, you know, Elsa Chen, I think, has been looked upon as a potential mayoral candidate since she joined the council in 2009. My own sense is that while she's very popular in her district, and she did very well in this election. She and part of that, I think, is because she has been the most consistent sort of challenger to the mayor, to the mayor's agenda on the council. And I think that has helped her within her own district. I have a hard time seeing her taking that citywide. And I don't know what her thought is on that. But when I hear people talk about Elsa Chen, it's usually a run for the state legislature. And I wonder if she will complete her term. I think she's going to be looking at some other races in the next year.
And any other possible challengers out there? I mean, he does look kind of vulnerable if he only scored 60-some-odd percent with no challenge.
If there was an obvious person out there, I think that would be true. But I don't know if there's anyone right now.
Right. And, you know, when I talked to Dr. Flores, he said that and you know, because a lot of people have said maybe stuff like pre-K for SA or the streetcar projects or something like that, maybe knocking down support for the mayor. Maybe people don't want to vote for him because of those issues. But, you know, he says it's really a nonpartisan issue. He's like, that's just the things that we do to, you know, make the quality of life better. He said it's just really the lack of voters going to the polls. That really decreased his vote count.
Now, what about the issue of basically our unpaid city council? I mean, we have a candidate, Rolando Brisson, is spending $300,000 to win a job that pays $20 a week. You know, so what's up with that? I mean, but the thing is, if we had better pay for the council members, maybe we would draw in better candidates and we would have more interest in these elections.
Yeah, I think that would just open up the pool of candidates. I mean, I don't look at that. I don't think there's any one issue that could be addressed or solved that would make turnout improve in any major way, unless it would be moving the elections to November. But I do think...
But let me tell you, another problem with moving to a November is that not only do you have a crowded ballot, but you also have crowded airwaves, this crowded broadband, getting to people and getting their attention.
Yeah.
It's harder to communicate. Just imagine like right now with Barack Obama and Mitt Romney and fighting over that and also having to have vibrant local elections. I mean, there would be no room to
have
that discussion.
If we still lived in the climate where we had the kind of excitement that, say, Henry Cisneros stirred in 1981, where he was able to get 156,000 people to the polls in a much smaller city, then the idea of having city elections set apart from all others is a great thing. But if you're at a point now where people are just not interested in not showing up, I think we have to look at some different options.
Kat is on the line. She wants to join the conversation. Kat, welcome to The Source.
Thanks. I'm Kat Swift. Many of you may know I ran for city council, and you just talked about one of the issues, the fact that we're the only major city that doesn't pay our city council a living wage. Mm-hmm. And so you only get certain kinds of people who can afford to run and can afford to serve. And outside of that, you're not going to get a different candidate pool unless you change that factor right there. And also, one of the other issues we used to talk about was public financing of campaigns, you know, where the majority of people who would want to run don't have access to the financial resources. And so if you had some sort of public financing matching funds like they have in New York City, Tucson, Arizona State, Maine, et cetera, you could actually increase the pool that way. And I'll tell you, I actually didn't vote for the first time in a city council race ever since I've been back in Texas for 12 years, partially because there was no opponent in my district, and there was no major opponent to Castro either, and there were no initiatives or anything. So the other thing I could mention is none of the above is an option, and also having proportional, or not proportional representation, choice, ranked choice, right. Choice voting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kat.
So that you eliminate the runoff.
Kat, thank you so much. Appreciate
your
call. Appreciate your call. Well, she brings up a lot of issues. There is broad support for increased pay for the city council members. I hear it from across the political spectrum.
Yeah, and it's been a political loser in the past, and it was something that was tried nearly a decade ago, and it failed. But I think my suspicion is that the mayor would support it, but their timing. You probably want the timing to be right, and you certainly don't want it to look as though you're trying to improve the situation for the current council members. The details would have to be worked out, but these people are working 50, 60 hours a week for $20 a meeting, and it's pretty hard to encourage people get people to want to participate in that unless they're financially secure retirees or they're getting some help from their family. And I think that we need to broaden the pool.
Right. So runoff date is June 15th. It'll be for two races, right?
District 8 and District 5.
And so we'll see if people have a chance to go out and vote in those races, and we'll see how energized they get their base, because it's all about turnout and it's about level of support in order to win. That's going to be interesting. We'll keep that in mind. We've already reached out to Rolando Brusones to ask him to come onto the show. We'll see if he answers the call this time. Anyway, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. We've been talking with Gilbert Garcia, The Express News, Ryan Lloyd from TPR. When we come back, it's Beer Week on The Source.